going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Spiegel and Holmes.
The Spiegel guy.
Spiegel guy.
What's his first name?
You're supposed to know that.
Sorry. Is that offensive?
Do you know his partner?
I don't. I met him at Cubs convention, but I don't know his name.
Afternoons on the Score.
Is that your station?
I don't know. No.
Why do we love roller coasters, Jennifer? Scary movies?
To experience the thrill of being terrified without the consequences.
The whole ballpark is buzzing. The pitch, swing, and a miss. Strike three. Three straight breaking balls. Otani is out number two.
Say what?
Come on now. You gotta ride the roller coaster, man. It's the whole point of being a baseball fan. You feeling it today? I was feeling it last night. I know a lot of Cub fans are.
Been a heck of a roller coaster ride this year.
Oh, man, Phil Emery's always feeling the roller coaster. And I know you were too, Lawrence. It's like this whole thing with the Dodgers taking 4 out of 5 stateside after losing the first two in Tokyo has a feeling of like, yeah, see you in October. That's right. Like, I'll see you in October, and you're going to remember that you lost 4 in a row, 4 out of 5 of our stateside games here in the middle of April. It's a little early to feel this damn good and confident in a baseball team, but there are reasons that merit that feeling.
To speak to the roller coaster effect of this, you remember what it was like after the first two games of the season. You saw the text messages that we got. You saw people inside the mob being like, season's over. Mm-hmm. This is going to be the worst season. They're not close to where the Dodgers are at. It was two games, and that's why it was important to say that. Just like it's important to say it's April when talking about this, but you would rather them win these games than not win these games. And it's nice. I hope that's the thing that I was thinking about today, like driving in. Like, I hope that when October comes around, that you and I are sitting here after talking about whatever it is the Bears did.
The 5-0 Bears.
That we're sitting here and going, man, you remember that series in April at Wrigley? That was wild.
Yeah.
And now look at this. It's possible that the Cubs and the Dodgers are going to match up in the playoffs when it matters most.
See you in the NLCS. And we can talk about all these highlights from the last two nights and Pete Crow Armstrong's heroics in L.A. and in Chicago.
Marching on Wrigley.
And sending them home. We talk about Shohei Ohtani being held, do what he was held at.
In big moments, dude, last night, where you would expect Shohei Ohtani to turn your lights out for you, they got him to swing a really good pitches, and he didn't do anything with them.
Porter Hodge's slider to the shoe tops of Shohei Ohtani that made him look awful. Highlighted by Pitching Ninja last night. Conversations all over MLB about this Cubs thing. I think it might be real because 16-10 with these four caveats. The schedule that we've talked about and we know.
Which is murderer's row.
The bullpen being the problematic situation it has been. And they're being aggressive in sorting it out and we all like that. But you're 16-10 with that schedule. This middle relief in the bullpen. Your third base that you handed to Matt Shaw being an absolute disaster. He's demoted. You have no everyday third baseman. It's a problem. And that's a factor. And oh, by the way, Justin Steele is out for the year. You lost your ace for the year. All those four things are still in place, and you're 16-10. That's why it feels undeniably real to almost all of the national baseball people.
I do think that we need to pay attention to what Jed said yesterday, though, because he's right. The idea of this team, and they've got the best run differential right now in the National League. I think it's by 7 runs over the Mets. They need to be better defensively.
Without a doubt.
They have got to figure that part out. And another night where you have an error, they've got to get better because some of those are not going to go their way. But here's where I am comforted a little bit when I look at the Cubs offense and whether or not it can continue to be as good as it's been so far. It feels more versatile.
Oh, definitely. It's a diversified lineup for sure. And there's bop going on at the bottom. And dudes like Nico have every reason to be right where they are, making contact, surrounded by some guys who are more swing and miss.
I would also add that if you're old school, the other thing is that this Cubs team steals bases, and they do it well. They do it in timely fashions too. And they've got a bunch of guys that can get you the next 90 that you need. And that's the type of thing that allows for your offense on nights when you're not hitting the ball out of the ballpark.
Hey, man.
I go back to that. Was that the Dodgers game where the wind was blowing in? Where the Cubs were just like, we don't care. We'll put up runs this way too. And we'll go station to station. And we'll do what we have to do. And we'll take an extra base. If you can sustain that type of focus and aggression, you're a more diversified offense.
Let yourself feel this high point of the roller coaster. There will be times where it goes back down, but let yourself be thinking about an October preview in April. And you know the Cubs are probably going to get better at those problematic spots between now and then. So they have a chance to be a better team than they are right now.
It was the Padres, and it was that Sunday game against the Padres that I'm thinking of. But still, another really, really good team.
Yeah, there's athletic stuff going on around baseball that we're going to have a chance to talk about as the season progresses that is really interesting. A lot of speed and athleticism that has kind of come back to the fore around the game.
Matt Bowen is getting ready to join us. He is going to talk about the draft and what the Bears need and players that you're interested in. We're going to pick his brain, so don't go anywhere. That's next on The Score.
Ten time. And the pitch to Ian Happ. Swinging a base hit into right. Brujan around third, heading home. Here comes the throw to the plate. Cubs win. Cubs win the ball game. Ian Happ, a game-winning single.
The Score Midday Show. 10-2 on 670 The Score.
Mark Grody, Marshall Harris hanging out. Pat Hughes on the call along with Ron Coomer. Zach Zabian did a fine job. I was listening to a lot of that game on the move because, well, it was 3 hours and 21 minutes. I had some stuff to do.
Old school.
I had to go to the grocery store and pick up some stuff. And I was like, I can't wait for this game to end because I don't know when this game is going to end. Joining us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline right now is Cubs President of Baseball Operations, Jed Hoyer, CircaLasVegas.com. honored to have Jed talk to us, especially after a game like that. And during our conversations with Jed, we want to remind you of his support for Lurie Children's Hospital, ranked the number one children's hospital in Illinois by the U.S. News and World Report, located at 225 East Chicago Avenue in downtown Chicago. Jed, I'll start with this. What makes Lurie's so special to you?
You know, it's such a wonderful place, and they have so many incredible doctors that do so much work. And, you know, my dad's a pediatrician, and my mom was a nurse, you know, growing up. And so just kind of very close to my heart. And I think whenever you have kids, watching that kind of work and that kind of care is really special.
They're responsible for the care of those children who need help. You are responsible for a Cubs organization trying to get where it wants to go, namely the playoffs. And so far, so good. Could you have imagined that this would be the way things had gone to start the season? Not only just the winning, but I know you talked and took a lot of grief for how you talked about the playing conditions at Wrigley Field. Seems like the Cubs are finding a way to play through it, if you will.
Yeah, no, it's been an impressive start. I think you know, our schedule has been incredibly hard. I think when you sort of look at the schedule at the beginning of the season, look who we were playing, you're like, oh, this is going to be a test right away. And I think our guys have answered that challenge. And listen, we're 25 games into a 162 game season, so you can't kind of look around and admire it. You just have to keep grinding and keep playing. But it is impressive. I give our guys a lot of credit for. You know, we've had two times on the West Coast, hard teams, some injuries, and these guys have just continued to be resilient. It's been a fun group to watch.
Jed, you've been here long enough to see some crazy occurrences at Wrigley Field, but what went down at Wrigley on Friday against Arizona was nuts. You just kind of throw everything out and let happen what happens. Last night, the 11-10 victory in 10 innings. What was your favorite part about last night?
Really it was, obviously my favorite part was having a lead early and hoping we were going to hold it. But, I think when you watch a team like the Dodgers, you can't make any mistakes against those guys. We walked two guys, we walked Shohei and Mookie, and then obviously, made a crucial error. You just can't give them extra outs. They're great players. Freddie Freeman's a first out Hall of Famer. Like when he comes up and drives in those runs, you can't be surprised. Like we gave them those base runners. So you can't make those mistakes. But I thought fighting back against one of the best bullpens in baseball, hitting a two-run homer against Vesia, homering against Scott, and then winning it in the 10th, I just thought that, that's a hard game to win against their bullpen. And our guys, they kept fighting. And I will say that was, for me, it was just, what I really liked about last night, honestly, was, it's mid-April and there's, sellout crowd and it was electric. And I thought this, the Wrigley in general last night was, it felt like something crazy was going to happen just given how the fans were. And it was fun to see that in mid-April.
Jed, it was a big market game. That's what I called it, man. I mean, you've got two of the biggest fan bases squaring off. Dodgers fans were there in force inside the park and outside of the park. So it was a blast to watch that game and to take it in. You brought up some of the mistakes and the early mistakes. And obviously, we know what you guys are trying to do at third base. We know where you guys are coming from. But it hasn't been pretty so far with the platoon that you guys are doing, with Gage Workman having made a couple of errors. I know Miguel Brujan in that, I believe it was the Friday game where he scooped it, made a nice play scooping it, and then just kind of dropped the ball. What is the update on the third base situation? Is this what you'll continue to go with, and there's something that you want to settle on at that position?
Well, I think the ultimate hope is that, Matt Shaw will go down to Triple A, kind of, find his swing again and come back up. I mean, that's sort of the hope and the plan. But yeah, we have to do better. I don't think there's any way around it. We can't, we're not providing much offense out of that position right now, which is, that happens, but like we're providing poor defense. And I think that's really what's hurting us. And, it's cost us, you can't, like I said, you can't give these good teams outs late in games. We've made a bunch of crucial, late inning, mistakes over there. So we have to tighten it up defensively. And I think about our team and the way we're built, and this run scoring has been great, but ultimately we're not going to be able to score runs at this rate all year. We're built to be a really good, clean defensive team. We've got a bunch of guys that have won gold gloves and don't make mistakes. And, you know, destabilizes us, you know, and we have to cut out those mistakes.
And I'm sorry to Vidal Bruján. This is the third time I've done it. I'm just going to dismiss myself, Marshall. Go ahead.
No, you're good. Yeah. Jed, I want to ask you more about that third base situation. I know Matt Shaw hit a home run last night, his first hit down at AAA since being sit down. What is it specifically that you're looking for when you say working on things with his swing? What is it that you want to see from him, and what does that timeline look like? When's the earliest he could be back?
Yeah, I mean, so I think he got in some, it's a hard league and it's hard competition, you know, we've been facing. And I think that, through his struggles, he started to make subtle adjustments to survive, to make contact, to do different things. And like he kind of got away from his mechanics and what's made him good. And that's a pretty natural thing and normal thing for a young player. Yeah, as we sort of told him when he got sent out, I mean, like, you look at, we sent out Anthony Rizzo, we sent out Ian Happ, we sent out Kyle Schwarber, Javi Baez. Like, all these guys have gone up and down. It's hard to come up and just stay. And he needs to, both mentally, I think he is confident, but kind of get back to where he was. And then I think mechanically eliminate some of those bad habits that he got in. Like I said, getting in survival mode up here, facing great pitching every night, trying to put the ball in play. That's not who he is. He's a guy who drives the ball, who extra base hits. And I think that, he's kind of got in some bad habits. And once he gets out of those habits in AAA, I think we'll see him up here again soon.
Yeah, man. And you're able to talk about examples of the past of great Cubs players who came up, maybe were really great at first and then got sent back down. Anthony Rizzo struggled early on. Ian Happ in recent era, we know he wasn't pleased, but that probably did him some good. So I know that you can give those examples as some context. Jed, got to ask you about Kyle Tucker. First of all, the home run he hit, I mean, this guy is just so impressive at the plate. The two-run jack in the eighth inning on a slider against a lefty after he'd seen the pitch already. I want to hear your thoughts on that at bat. And then please update us on where things are with potentially getting a long-term deal done with Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, that was, that was probably the most impressive swing I think he's taken with us, in my opinion, just because, he's facing an elite lefty in Vesia, who doesn't give up damage to lefties. And, he pulled his hands in on that swing and adjusted his swing and hit a homer in a clutch situation. And it was just, it was just kind of one of those moments where we're like, well, that's why he's elite right there. That was incredibly impressive. And he's been fun to watch. It's a low pulse in the box. I think his takes away are so impressive. He knows the strike zone. And, I do think that, like, the one thing that probably sticks out for me more than anything with our offense so far is our decision making has been really good. Ian makes great decisions. Tucker, Seiya, Bush, like that first four guys in the lineup are hard to pitch to. They're not going to chase. And I think when I sort of watch offenses that I admire, especially in the playoffs, and you watch the elite offenses, that's what they do. They make you throw strikes. They don't get themselves out of the strike zone. And I think we've done a really good job of that. And some of the run scoring stuff won't be sustainable, but I think that the decision making, I think, is kind of a sticky thing, and hopefully we can continue that. Listen, as far as long term stuff, like, obviously we'd love to keep Kyle long term, and who wouldn't want a player like that? And I think that I would keep anything, I would keep any conversations we're having internal. I think that, it's hard to negotiate in season. I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. If we do have those conversations, we'll keep them internal. But I do think, obviously, like I said, he's really fun to watch. I think he has a huge impact on the entire team and entire offense. And like I said, he's a player that any team would want to have in the lineup.
Are you optimistic that there's a way you can keep him from reaching free agency? Because let's face it, it's a contract year. And right now, every swing of the bat feels like it's gaining extra coins.
Yeah. Listen, my sense is, and I think the single best recruiting tool that the Cubs have is last night, right? This is a really special place to play. It's an incredible city. It's an even better city in the summer, listen, I think, he's not going to have a shortage of suitors. My hope is that Wrigley in Chicago become really special to him, and he realizes, like, there's not a better place to play in baseball. But yeah, it's not, listen, he's not going to have a shortage of suitors given his talent level. And, obviously, like I said, it's not something we're obviously well aware of the situation, but like, I think, you know, talking about it, you know, I've got a great relationship with his agency. And obviously if those conversations do have, we'll just kind of keep him tight to the vest.
It feels like to us that's one part of the conversation is you convincing Kyle Tucker to stay here. How much of it though is you saying, look at that guy and what he's doing, convincing ownership to open up that checkbook a little bit larger, since as we know, you guys have never signed a player to a $200 million deal, let alone what Kyle Tucker will probably end up getting.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's, you know, I think my job in with every transaction is to sort of lay out a case for why it makes sense. So I think that's my job, you know, is always to, you know, to make the right long-term and short-term decision for the Cubs and to make a case for it. And I think, you know, our owners are great about, you know, when I take something to them that, I think I've spent time on, it makes sense. And we researched and, you know, listen, like there's a lot of work that goes into any kind of transaction that big, and they've always been super receptive.
All right, we'll let that settle in, and Jed, and then we'll ask you again in 2 weeks, okay?
Yeah, perfect.
It's going to keep having perfect. This conversation, and we will. Yeah. The other guy, to a lesser degree, but maybe just as important, would be Pete Crow Armstrong. Is there anything, same rules there? Will there be discussion in season with PCA on a potential contract extension? What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, same thing. I wouldn't talk about the details. Obviously, it came out that we had had conversations in spring training, and we did. And, you know, they're very amicable. And, you know, like I said, if we do revisit it, I would keep it quiet. But, like, he's a great kid. I think he has a chance to be a great player. And, obviously, we had those discussions in spring. We wouldn't have had those discussions if he wasn't a guy that we wanted to extend beyond our current control. And, you know, I think with Pete, I think that, you know, we're kind of like with Matt Shaw. We talked about Matt Shaw, like, you know, last year Pete came up, he came up in 23 and struggled. He came up last year and struggled, you know, obviously adjusting to the league. I think we're starting to see, you know, what he can be. I think he's you know, he's maturing, you know, at the plate. Now, obviously I think everyone can see what he does on defense and what he does with on the bases, but watching that maturity, you know, it happens quickly sometimes. And, you know, we watched it with him last year, and hopefully we're watching the same thing with Shaw later this summer.
Jed, on PCA, it seems to me from watching the games that, and I know it's probably not as simplified as what I'm about to say, but it seems like you guys are saying to PCA, you go out there and just be you. If you need to swing at the first pitch every time and be active with the bat and swinging for the downs and swing for the big homers and, you know, hitting later in the lineup, is that kind of, am I onto something there philosophically with Pete Crow Armstrong?
Not as much offensively, but in personality wise, absolutely. Like, I think that, you know, Pete is, he's emotional, you know, he's aggressive, he's eccentric. And I just think that, like, that's who he is, and that's who we want him to be. Like, I love him for it. It's wonderful. And, you know, I think that it's a nice counter to some of the other guys on the team where this kind of more stoic and serious. And so to me, it's like you be you. You're a great defender. You're a great base runner. Like, you're developing as a hitter. Like, go be yourself and don't try to be those other guys. Other guys had a different path. They have different personalities. And, you know, I do think that, you know, offensively, I think he's making better decisions at the plate. He's learning the league, he's learning what he can hit and what he can't hit. And, you know, that's a process that these other guys have been through. But, like, during that process, don't try to be someone else. Like, I admire Nico and Dansby and Ian and those guys so much. Their personalities are their personalities. Pete needs to be different. That's who he is. And I think that the whole team's kind of embraced that.
All right, so the Cubs, your team is leading the league in runs scored. They lead the league in the major leagues, I'm saying, in run differential at plus 42. Meanwhile, the bullpen has been an issue. We saw more of that last night. I want to know what your overall stance is. Gavin Halliwell comes in right out of AAA and gives two very good innings. Porter Hodge looks great, but at the same time, you have other guys who are up and down. And I'm just wondering, with Brad Keller, the way he pitched, how much are you monitoring on a day-to-day basis what this bullpen is seeing? We've seen kind of a short lease, so we're trying to understand, like, Javier Saad makes a start last night. What is your overall vision for how this team is going to look in the coming weeks with Assad coming back, with Jordan Wicks getting sent back down, and you kind of being on this roller coaster and really a merry-go-round of the relievers in the first half of the season?
Well, I mean, some of the merry-go-round has been performance, and some of the merry-go-round is just a natural churn of, of baseball in 2025. I mean, it's just, you know, you look at every team, and every team is like churning through the bottom of their bullpen. That's why you really want to have guys with options in your bullpen, because you just have to constantly be going to get fresh arms. It's just that how the game, unfortunately, is how the game is played now. Like, we're making transactions almost every night. But yeah, we have to tighten it up in the bullpen. I think we've had, you know, a number of games and performances where I think we pitched really well, but like we've been just plagued by these 5+ run innings. You know, we've done it like 3 or 4 different times this year, and that's the part that we have to tighten up. And you know, normally they're started with walks. Honestly, we've walked too many guys in the bullpen. You know, Brad Keller has been excellent for us all year. You know, last night wasn't his best, but he's been good. You know, Porter had the bad outing coming in in relief of Wicks. I think generally those guys have been good. But it's undeniable we have to stop having those kind of innings. And we're playing good teams, and we're playing offenses that make you pay for every mistake. But yeah, we have to tighten up those big runs. I mean, we had a game on Sunday in Arizona. We had the Friday game against Arizona. We had the game last night. Like, we're just giving up too many 5+ run innings, and our blowups have been bad. And we'll keep working on it. The bullpen is going to be something we work on all summer. I think like most teams, you just got to keep on shuffling guys through, and it's a volatile enough area where, you know, all of a sudden you can hit on a guy here, a guy there, and then next thing you know, it solidifies. So we'll keep working on it. You know, obviously we see the same issues. We're not going to be able to like come back from 3 and 4 down over and over, and we just have to do a better job of you know, pitching in those situations and not throwing strikes, not making errors, and not putting extra pressure on those guys.
The good news is your opponent's also complaining about giving up too many 5-run-plus innings. Jed, we appreciate you stopping by and visiting with us a little here on Score Middays.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
See you, Jed. Take care.
Spiegel and Holmes Show Flashback. Flashback. Flashback.
I don't know. I guess, I mean, it's my life, right? I think that when I drive to the Lakes, you know, Sheridan to head down to work some days, like, do I stop and get jealous and unable to complete my day looking at some of the houses on the water? Like, no, I don't. You got to do the best you can with what you have. And I think that's the job, right? You can't get jealous of everyone else. You know, they have their own challenges and own problems. And I think, you know, just knowing, you know, we knew what our payroll was. We knew what we had to do. And I think, you know, we worked hard this offseason to build the best team possible within that. And I just don't think you can get distracted by what others have. I don't think you can get distracted by, you know, jealousy, as to your word or whatever, or complaining about it. You just move forward and try to do the best you can. And I think that there's only a handful of those in baseball, and that's a good thing, I think.
We talked with Jed Hoyer about the Dodgers and their front office at the beginning of the season.
Back.
Yeah, they're back tonight, and that's it for the season. Hopefully you'll see them in the, or maybe hopefully not, you'll see them in the LCS.
I mean, who else you want to see? San Diego?
No.
You want to see the Mets? Maybe.
Maybe. Phillies?
Maybe. No. Aaron Nola can't pitch anymore.
Yeah, there's a struggle. But we asked him about their front office and their ability to do deferred contracts. And clearly everyone in Major League Baseball is jealous of their ridiculous television deal that they have. Was that a guy with another 24 years left on it?
Something outrageous. And the way they structured that deal, like they got Time Warner so good. They like built in an increase in expected viewers for an industry where the exact opposite has taken place in dramatic ways.
They have 15 more. Sorry, I shorted them. They've only got 15 more years left on a 25-year, $8.35 billion deal with Time Warner.
Unbelievable. But it's not just the money. Andrew Friedman does a lot of things really, really well. And they talk about it in this wonderful article that Tyler Kepner put together over at The Athletic. It's a really, really good baseball writer. And he's got really good contacts. And he talked with 40 different top decision makers from across MLB.
Okay.
Executives and a few coaches, but mostly executives, to have them rank the top five front offices in baseball. They could not vote for their own team. And they assigned a point value, 10 points for first place, 7 for second, etc., and offered anonymity. And this article is full of unbelievable quotes, as well as a ranking of the top 20 front offices around baseball. And yes, Lawrence, you know who's first.
Who are the Chicago White Sox?
They did not make it into the conversation. Oh. They were not in the others receiving votes category.
No.
Remember that when you were younger?
Oh, yeah. Where others receiving votes?
Where, I mean, it still exists, but it's different than like the newspaper would come out on Monday and you're like, oh, who is my team receiving votes?
Top 25?
Yeah.
Yeah, like basketball top 25. And you're like, where's Illinois? Come on.
Where's DePaul? Oh, there they are.
Yeah, others receiving votes.
We're back, baby.
Yeah, White Sox not there. But are the Cubs. We'll get there. Number one is the Dodgers. Far and away the most first place votes. Far and away the most total points. And the way that they're talked about, there's one person saying that, yes, they do have, it's reached a point from a financial perspective of having an unfair advantage, but
that's good work by your people.
But everyone says things like they manage the roster so well. It feels like they have 60 guys on the 40 man. I don't know how they do it. Another, they've been built brick by brick for a long time. They do 100 things right every year to get where they are. So, lots of respect.
So look, isn't this the thing that you're hoping for? Like when Andrew Friedman was at the Rays, weren't we all going, man, what if that dude had a budget?
That's the dream.
And now, like, he's got the budget in baseball, and look at what he's doing with it.
So they're number one. The Tampa Rays are number two, and they have the second most first place votes as well, does Tampa Bay. And they're talked about as having, you know, here's something I didn't realize. They got the same hitting coach and pitching coach for 8 seasons. And Kevin Cash is in his 11th season.
He's one of my favorite managers.
So you develop guys and you churn the roster as much as they do and turn it over as much as they do. And they have exactly the same teachers teaching exactly the same organizational way at the big league level.
And they're always competitive. Now, they're kind of in a weird place because I don't know if they're ever going to win. But they're always competitive. And is that good enough? I don't think it is for the people down there because they don't like going and they should be in Montreal.
The Brewers are number three as the small market gold standard. And
that hurts a little bit.
Yeah, it does. It should hurt a little bit. They move on from David Stearns, who's now with the Mets, and Craig Counsell, who's here, and they do not miss a beat. Cleveland is fourth.
And the American League version of the Brewers.
Yeah, and Cleveland's talked about as the finishing school for front office people. So with Carter Hawkins here, that's interesting. Like that guy, Chris Antonetti, who's in charge in Cleveland, people say like he's just amazing at teaching people to then do the job other places. The Yankees are fifth. And you might think of Brian Cashman as not being so good, but that's not the way he's looked at around the league. One of the things they talk about is how they always have enough prospects to trade and get what they need.
That's fair.
Which because they draft well, they develop well. And so I thought that was interesting to see them that high. The Braves at six, the Phillies at seven, Dave Dombrowski right there.
Now look, inside of this, outside of the Rays and the Brewers, there's a lot of money we're talking about.
There is.
There's a lot of payroll, a lot of good television deals in that group.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. But it's also money and places that seem to develop their kids pretty well.
Yep.
So it's that combo. Arizona and Mike Hazen is there. Plenty of good trades. Talked about for them. The Orioles are there. One of few that excel in both hitting and pitching development.
The last 5 years for the Orioles as a franchise have been pretty tremendous because you could see it happening and then everyone gets up. And for the most part, they've been as good as advertised.
Yeah, they've all gotten there together. Now, none of them have gotten extended and they had only 1 year of a big money pitcher in Burns. And so we'll see what they do after that. So they're number nine. Number 10 is San Diego and A.J. Preller.
Go for it every year.
I freaking love that dude. Oh, they always draft well and do well internationally, some of the quotes talk about. So they have stuff to trade when they need to. They shed money and then add it again. I was thinking about this one trade tree real quick here. they give up Mackenzie Gore and James Wood and C.J. Abrams in the Juan Soto deal. That's a lot. But then they turn Soto around and send him to the Yankees after a year for Michael King, who's pretty much their ace right now, and Drew Thorpe, who they then turn around and send to the White Sox as the centerpiece of the Dylan Cease trade. So, yeah, they gave up James Wood and Abrams and Mackenzie Gore, but they still ended up with Michael King and Dylan Cease out of that mix, which is pretty amazing.
How about clean-shaven Dylan Cease? Got rid of the mustache, got rid of the beard for a little bit.
The hair's still long, though?
Yeah, the hair's still long, but he got rid of that funky mustache he was rocking for a while.
Gavin Sheets, homer to the opposite field yesterday out of the two-hole.
Gavin Sheets is hitting the ball hard for the Padres.
So there's the Padres.
They figured out a way to use him that makes perfect sense.
And no Cubs in the top 10. And then here's your others receiving votes.
I was very surprised to not see the Cubs at the top. I figured they would end up at like 10. Uh-huh. That's where I started to get nervous that you had sent me a bad link.
Yeah.
I got some bad information. That's what I thought.
Number 11 is the New York Mets, and they're expecting them to be higher next year as David Stearns does his Andrew Friedman thing on the East Coast. Number 12 is the Tigers with former Cub exec Scott Harris. Number 13 is a tie between the Astros and the Rangers. Number 15 is the Twins. Number 16 is the Royals. Number 17 is the Mariners. Number 18 is the Red Sox, with former Cubs director of pitching Craig Breslow now in charge.
I didn't hear you say Chicago Cubs.
Number 19 is the Reds, tied with the Washington Nationals.
The Cincinnati Reds? Wait a minute. Didn't the Washington Nationals trade away a Hall of Fame lineup?
Pretty much. Well, I mean, they let Bryce Harper walk. Then they traded Soto. They also traded Trey Turner.
Yeah.
And Max Scherzer. The Soto trade looks great. So I don't know.
Schwarber?
They only got, they had Schwarber and didn't keep him. So I don't know. I mean, you could certainly quarrel with some of these at the bottom, for sure. I mean, the Reds have a host of young, interesting kids, but they haven't added anything to it.
And they ain't one bleep.
Yeah. You could quarrel with the Nationals, but so there's your top 20. Others receiving votes, did not receive votes.
Didn't the Nationals also give Anthony Rendon a ton of money before he got a ton from the Phillies?
No.
Or was that just arbitration?
No. Rendon got the money from the Angels.
Okay. All right.
So Never mind. So Rendon, they let him walk. They let him walk. They didn't trade him for nothing, but they let him walk just like they let Harper walk.
I'm not sure what to do with Rendon, Shane, because I feel like he's played too much to be a Hall of Famer at the bank, but his finesse on this, like, oh, you gave me all this money? Oh, my arm!
He's making $38 million a year for someone who doesn't want to play baseball.
He sure is.
$38 million through 2026.
The finesse is strong.
The guy's played 7 games in the last 14 decades.
I love how angry Anthony Rendon
is. I hate that guy, dude.
Well, we talk about the things that we said that were correct. I wanted Anthony Rendon on the White Sox so bad.
Me too.
And the way he's performed, it's shocking that he's not on the White Sox.
Well, he will be in about 10 years. Give it 10 years. And then he'll be making $48 million a year.
By the way, the slash line on Anthony Rendon this season, 0, because he hasn't played. In 2024, it was 218, 307, 267.
Oh, man.
And how many games? Like 40?
57. Not bad. In 2023, he played 43 games, and then he played 47 in 22.
And he made $38 million in each of those years.
He played 58 games. Man. Wow. You would have to put three seasons together to get to a full season of games from Anthony Rendon, the Angel. That last
top priority for you, though?
That's never been a top priority for me.
Playing?
The last season, this
never
is why he got the money.
Priority.
The last season with him with the Nationals.
Oh, he crushed it.
You ready?
Yeah.
319, 412, 598.
That's crazy.
How do you know?
He finished third for MVP.
He got $300 million deal to then play 40 games.
Ironically, he's Nate Davis's favorite baseball player. He's number one.
Big
on
ping
his
pong
list.
Guy.
Nate Davis had posters of Anthony Rendon all over his walls.
It's insane, dude.
They both hate their sports.
They seem to. Man, the hug from Ron Washington to Anthony Rendon. Like, I'm so sorry about your time. We'll come back and play when you're ready. Still not ready? Okay, that's
all right.
Go ahead with your survey. My bad. Anthony Rendon just pisses me off.
No Cubs in the top 20 is distressing. And, you know, talking to a couple people around the game, it's not a shocker that they're not there in the top 20. And I think it's a very interesting, not a shocker in terms of just reputation and the way that they are discussed.
They are not in the top 20.
You shocked?
If you wanted to say...
I was very surprised when I saw it. I'm saying the people that I reached out to who are in the game and know more than me were like, yeah, that's real.
Yeah, it's hard for me to believe that they're a bottom 10 front office. If you wanted to say if them not being in the top 10, okay, you're probably right about that. But when you start talking about like the Reds and stuff, I'm like, I don't know. I wonder why when you talk to people, why do you think it is that they've fallen out of favor with a front office that does have someone from the Cleveland Finishing School of executives and does have someone who has been attached to a World Series, not as the main guy, but as one of the guys. So why is there a disconnect?
Position players, young position players of consequence that are under control for a while and helping you win at the big league level. It looks a little better right now in the middle of this season. This is spring training that these surveys were done. You know,
the Michael Bush thing looks good.
Well, but that's not homegrown.
But still, it's your front office making a trade for a guy that didn't have a position.
Sure.
And you were like, hey, we got a couple of positions that you can play for us.
PCA and
you another
know,
trade.
Another trade. Miguel Amaya, you know, if that's a guy showing up and doing something for you that you built and brought up. But the Matt Shaw thing looks terrible right now in this moment. You know, look, Justin Steele looks good, but they're working at a bullpen. The bullpen has been an issue for, what, 3 straight years? Looks a little better this year. But the stuff that I've heard about is the inability to finish the job right now for this year so far. In
like
terms
development?
Of development? You know, no, like that big money piece.
Gotcha.
You know, so that kind of thing and an inability to create the bullpen depth and variety that you need.
And the big money that you did spend doesn't look great. Dansby Swanson's a negative .2 WAR right now.
Which is astonishing considering his defensive utility. He really is.
Scuffling at the plate, trying to find it. You watch the at-bats and he just looks like he's grinding through them and he's not getting the results. There have been a couple of hard hit balls where you go, okay, maybe the BABIP gods will shine on him at some point, but right now, 177, 223, 344.
Yeah.
An OPS of 567.
I will say, like, some of the people that I talked to, one was like an old school baseball salt who intimated that they're too in love with numbers, and another was a modern numbers guy who said that was not the problem. You know, so like there's still a little bit of a split. I don't have wonderful clarity on exactly what it is, but this idea that they're not amongst the very best is readily accepted in terms of the top 10.
But aren't there a lot of lists that say that the Cubs minor leagues are pretty good?
Yes. Yes.
So then how can the front office not get credit for that where you have them hanging out with the Washington Nationals and Cincinnati Reds?
It's a fair question. Maybe because it's 83 and 79 followed by 83 and 79. So whatever conviction there was of being decent has not been good enough for a market of this size.
Wait. Maybe it's because the most successful transaction they've made is Michael Bush in the last few years. Right?
It's pretty, yeah. I mean, that's a successful one, and they gave up some good young pieces to do it.
Bias for PCA is pretty good.
Bias for PCA, it's like...
But that was Theo, wasn't it?
And yeah, I guess it was. No. It was Jed. It was Jed. Theo left before that stuff all happened. Before that deadline happened.
Theo left
happened.
The party before they started to clean up the red solo cups.
Yeah. So it's PCA, and see, I've asked this before. Is PCA, and let's say Kevin Alcantara is good, those two guys, is that enough to come out of the deadline? Because Bryant, Canario, and Caleb Killian are both gone. You know, the other pitcher you got for Rizzo is gone. PCA is here. You got nothing for Schwarber.
I mean, I would argue that the two players that you brought in from Japan have been very important.
So, yeah, Shota is probably your best acquisition.
Right?
Shota's a real good acquisition.
And Seiya's been, I know that he is befuddling, but he's been good.
But that's just money. I'm talking about transactional moves.
I would argue that with the Japanese league, it is money, but it's also scouting. And there are some people that looked at Shota and go, he's maybe a five. They said, no, we think he can be top of the rotation type good. And he was that last year.
Yeah.
So I would.
Shota's a big win. Shota's a massive organizational win. And there's
and
a
I
few
think
of them.
Seiya is too.
I think you could argue that I think you could easily argue they ought to be in this top 20. Top 10, okay, fine. But there's enough organizational health. And we're pointing to some wins on the big league roster right now that look better. Than this representation.
A Cub, his OPS plus is 130. That's, as a Cub, his slash is 278, 354, 473. He's an 828 OPS player. That's a very good player to have added to your lineup.
Texture, by the way, brings up a very good point, a good one. Ben Brown acquisition for half a year of David Robertson is a very nice trade. That looks very good right now. That is a rotation piece with possible a high-end ceiling for, a couple of months of David Robertson. So there's a few. So maybe what thing probably should be 15?
Yeah,
14.
That's what made sense to me.
This is why I wanted to bring it up and do it with you.
All right.
As we talk about it, I think you're probably right that this is a little too harsh.
Yeah.
But outside the top 10 feels all right.
I wonder why though. That's worth doing some digging on, too.
Agreed.
You know what I mean?
Agreed.
Why don't we take a break? When we come back, let's get back into the Bears. Dan Wiederer is going to join us, and we're going to talk to him about what he heard at the Piccolo Awards today and what the Bears are getting ready to do with the draft being 2 days away. Don't go anywhere. Spiegel and Holmes here with you until 6 on The Score.
When you look at this particular draft class, what would...
Russell Dorsey, national MLB insider for Yahoo Sports.
It's the cost of doing business. You want a superstar type of talent, a five-tool player in Kyle Tucker. It's not free, right? You just don't get a Kyle Tucker. Yes, it's for a year. I can understand that, but you got to give something to get something.
Insider and analyst for Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV+.
If stacking the deck is the term you're using to describe one team, what turn of phrase would you use to describe the Chicago White Sox right now?
Finding the deck.
Insider and analyst on MLB Network.
What's up, Russ?
Russell Dorsey on 670 The Score. The Score.
So normally, guests, they join us via the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. That's what Russ Dorsey would be doing. Download the Circa app today. But you know what? My guy Russ Dorsey said, let me come down there and spit fire in real life. And I appreciate that. Russ Dorsey joining the program. Mark Grody, Marshall Harris. It's middays here on The Score talking baseball. I don't know if you heard. We spoke with the Cubs president of baseball operations earlier today, Jed Hoyer. Did you hear about that?
I've heard of him.
Okay, but you didn't hear the conversation probably because you're busy doing a lot of things, doing a lot of writing, whether you're out on a run. You can tune us in, though, when you're out on your run, like your five-mile run.
I do it from time to time.
Okay, appreciate you.
Do you live in the same area as Marshall and I? I don't want to get it up, but okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I live down the street.
Oh, my God.
Actually, Groats.
How about that?
We could all carpool home. I mean, it's...
I offered him a ride today. I said I could.
Did he turn you down?
He did. He turned me
Mr.
down.
Mr. Walker. He loves to walk.
Yeah. I normally like to walk every day, too, but I have to take something from the station here. I have to haul something home. So I decided today would be a good day.
You let Groats drive alone?
That's how big his bag of money is. There was not going to be room in the car for me and the bag of money on the way back.
No,
so
don't do that. Because that's the excuse. Because you wanted to let my man drive alone.
Yeah. No, he offered to drive me.
He was just like straight up no. With no explanation. No. Just no. A no I get from him.
I'm learning more about you as the years go by, Marshall.
I can show you the text in the break. It was very amicable and everything else. But back to Jed Hoyer, okay? Let's not lose sight of
this guy.
What's going on? Earlier today, Mark Grody and I had the honor of talking with Jed Hoyer. And of course, as every time he talks to anyone, we asked about Kyle Tucker. Here's what he said.
My sense is, and I think the single best recruiting tool that the Cubs have is last night, right? This is a really special place to play. It's an incredible city. It's an even better city in the summer. you know, listen, I think, you know, he's not going to have a shortage of suitors. You know, my hope is that Wrigley in Chicago become really special to him, and he realizes, like, there's not a better place to play in baseball. But, yeah, it's not, you know, listen, he's not going to have a shortage of suitors given his talent level. And, you know, obviously, like I said, well, you know, it's not something – we're obviously well aware of the situation, but, like, I think – you know, talking about it, you know, I've got a great relationship with his agency. And obviously, if those conversations do have, we'll just kind of keep him tight to the vest.
You know, contrary to what he said there, I'm going to have to push back. That is not the best tool. The vibes at Wrigley Field are not the best. The best tool is what we were just talking about with Mark Grody, a big bag of money. In fact, the biggest bag of money, I guarantee you they can keep him here. Is that crazy for me to say that? Or is it more crazy to think that they would give him the biggest bag of money?
It's not crazy to say that the best recruiting tool is the biggest bag of money. You're 100% correct in that, Marshall Harris. Here's my thing with the whole Kyle Tucker Cubs situation. I love that Cubs fans acquired a superstar talent and immediately said, sign him for life before he ever played a game, right? And then he went to show you why you should sign him for life. I love that. It don't work like that. Like, just because you want somebody for a long time, Groats, doesn't mean that I'm not going to do the smart business thing and go to the end of the season and talk to everybody, get a little competition, and then that's how you ultimately get the big bag of money at the end of the rainbow, Marshall Harris. That's what happens. And the idea that Kyle Tucker's just going to say, you know what, 1 month in Chicago and a comeback victory against the Dodgers – I've made my decision to stay in Chicago for the rest of my life.
Like,
I'm a realist, girl. I've seen this thing happen too much to just... It's ridiculous, and I don't want Cubs fans to do themselves a disservice. Yes, you should want Kyle Tucker to be a Cub for life. You should. You should want to go to the postseason. You should want to win the World Series every year. You should. You should put truth to power and tell people, hey, let's spend money and be a good baseball team. But you have to be realistic. If I've played 6 years in the big leagues and I've been a winner every step of the way, if I'm Kyle Tucker and I'm a World Series champ, I'm a five-tool player, I'm a superstar, probably going to have the best season of my career this year, why in the hell would I sign a deal today?
No. I don't think anybody wants him to sign a deal today.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, sorry. No one expects him to actually sign a deal before the end of the season.
Yeah. Well, at least talk.
But you want to feel like you have a chance. And my when you look at the biggest contract not being over $200 million that the Cubs have ever issued, going to Dansby Swanson, and we see how that's not necessarily worked out to how everyone thought it might. For him to understand he's going to get an excess of $500 million. Do you have $500 million that you're willing to give Kyle Tucker? They just want the answer to that question specifically to be yes. If you lose out, you lose out. But at least did you... They saw what happened with Alex Bregman, and they saw that they weren't even a top two finisher for Alex Bregman. The Detroit Tigers were more ready to have Alex Bregman join their team than the Cubs. And people in Chicago, the third largest market in the country, are not good with that. And you can understand why. And they're looking at ownership, not necessarily Jed Hoyer, because we've heard Jed Hoyer say things that make us believe it ain't his call, because it never is when it comes to a contract that big. I think they just want to know that the Cubs are in the running to keep Kyle Tucker past the one season, the one summer fling of a summer.
That remains to be seen, Marshall, if they're going to be in the... Because here's my thing. Like, I'm going to give you real answers.
I like
you ask
real
a real
answers.
Question,
no, you're right.
I'm going to give you a real answer. Do the Cubs have the money to sign a guy like a Kyle Tucker? Absolutely. Will they? Shrug emoji. And that's what I have to tell you.
And that's where, like, the disconnect is.
If you were
the fan
in the ballpark last night, which I was, and you see a packed Wrigley Field, and you're walking around Wrigleyville, you're seeing all the new shops and restaurants and stores, and the rooftops are filled, and there's the barbecue smoke going up. It's a great time. You're generating some income, Marshall. You are. You have money to sign great players like Kyle Tucker, but we haven't seen them do it at that level. And so I can't just sit here and say, oh, yeah, they'll be in the running. I would like to imagine. Imagine a team that has the revenue like the Chicago Cubs are in the running, but I don't know. Have we seen it?
Hey, we also don't know if Kyle Tucker wants all of that. We don't know if he likes the Wrigleyville-ness that you were just describing.
Kyle Tucker has been a winner ever since he got to the big leagues, right? When you're in a place like Houston and you experience winning every year.
Playoffs are a given.
Since your rookie year, you've been going to the ALCS at a minimum and then winning the World Series before you turn 29 years old. You already got a World Series championship. Guys who play their entire careers sometimes never reach that benchmark. So I'm not just going to sign up unless I know this team, this organization is committed to winning and winning long term. Also, big bag of money.
No, I think big bag of money is at the top of the list, but also just to make sure, and again, if they lose out on Kyle Tucker, that's not something that people will be like, I can't believe we lost out on Kyle Tucker. But if they never come to the table in the same way that other big market teams do, that's where the disappointment is. That's where the disconnect, again, is between the fan base and ownership. And not unlike other teams in the city, it's do you want to have a good show that you put on in the regular season, or are you serious about winning it all? And I think we are going to see a Cubs team this year, at least, at the trade deadline, if things continue to go the way they're going right now. Toughest schedule in the league. If they continue to perform, they'll go try to fix the bullpen. They're definitely going to try to fix third base. And they'll make a push for the World Series, because I think they could see now, okay, I'm looking around these other teams. They're maybe better from top to bottom than us, but we got a shot. Strengthen your shot.
The Chicago Cubs are a good baseball team.
Yes.
Right? Like, this is, it's early, and you can, things can go bad really quick. We've seen it before, in the words of Chris Paul. I can't say the whole thing, but.
No, don't do that.
Stuff got bad real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I'm looking at this Cubs team and I project it out over 162, this might be the best team they've had since 2018, right? Like, this is a Cubs team that you can look at and say, this is a division winner. This is a team that has talent. Maybe you add a top-tier starting pitcher at the deadline. Who that might be, who knows? Is it Pablo Lopez? Is it Sandy Alcantara down in Miami? That would be, you know, the top-tier starter on the market. But they're going to be able to do something. You're going to have to add to that bullpen, because that's not going to be a bullpen that you can really think you can win over 162 with. So you're going to have to supplement that. But yeah, like, this is a good team. And how do you keep good players in a city like Chicago? You tell them, hey, we're going to build good teams every year.
Well, the thing that we're dancing around here is the owner of the team, Tom Ricketts. And it appears from all, you know, just from reading you guys and those on the beat, that the problem is that Tom Ricketts is not willing to max out what he is paying players right now. And does he want that, though, on his watch? Will the pressure catch up with Tom Ricketts and allowing Jed Hoyer to cook a little bit more, to have a conversation right now with Kyle Tucker about keeping here for a long time and maybe promising Kyle Tucker, hey, we're going to open things up a little bit next year? Is that plausible that Tom Ricketts will, and I don't know if I need to say it, change his ways? Would that be the right way to put it?
Maybe, question mark. Like, you know who, this Cubs team, their offense is the best in baseball, right? By production, by eye test, they're the best offense in baseball. You know what they could really use? A third baseman. You know who's a third baseman that plays for the Boston Red Sox? Like, imagine how good this team would be today if Alex Bregman was also in this lineup.
Right.
You know, like, maybe you look back and say, man, like, we were a really good team this year. Maybe if we had spent the extra money on Bregman, we could have put ourselves in a position to make the NLCS, maybe even a World Series. Maybe if this team performs to the peak of the talent they have on the roster, maybe they look back and they have one of those meetings, they'll all handle on deck meetings and say, all right, tell me why I need to spend $515, $520 on Kyle Tucker. Like, that is something that happens in baseball. Like, sometimes an owner gets convinced. Sometimes you have the right pitch. Sometimes you have the right person talk where it's like, you know what? You're right. Yes, everybody would like their ownership group to feel that on their own, but it doesn't work like that all the time. So, yes, to your question, I do think that's possible, but we haven't seen it in a while.
That is the voice of Russell Dorsey. You can find him on The Artist, formerly known as Twitter, Russ_Dorsey, and then the number one, because he is number one in our hearts and our minds.
He's not pre-owned.
He's a Yahoo Sports MLB insider. He is an insider and analyst for MLB Network and Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV+. He'll actually be doing sidelines in San Francisco this weekend.
In San Francisco, headed out there tomorrow. Really excited about that. Doing the sidelines isn't something that I ever imagined I'd do. But in growth, like, you have experience doing that. Like, it's fun being out there and relaying information to the people and giving insight and background and anecdotes that you have and things like that. Like, I've really enjoyed doing it. So I like when I get the opportunity.
It's Giants and who?
Giants and Rangers.
Oh, that's a good series,
yeah,
really too.
Yeah.
That's a good matchup. I didn't have matchups like that when I was a sideline reporter for the Pittsburgh Pirates. So, yeah, exactly. Your face said it all with the little quiver of the corner. Yeah.
Wait, what year was that?
Yeah, I was going to ask the same.
I was Pittsburgh from 2005 to 2008.
Ooh, that's pre-McCutcheon.
So that's Jack Wilson.
Yeah. Oh, Jack Wilson, Freddie Sanchez, batting champ, Jason Bay.
Oh.
Yeah, look at you.
I do this.
That was back. Oliver Perez was still a starting pitcher in the major leagues. That's
wow.
Yeah, so Oliver he had a nice long run as a reliever.
Very long run.
So all of that, Zach Duke, we can do this forever. But so what I'm saying is, Russ, looking at the overall baseball, is it, any big surprises, any big disappointments? Everything looks like it's pretty much going to form. Even the Braves are starting to come back to the mean, if you will.
Yeah, the Braves are the one that surprises you because no team that's ever, and I talked about this with you guys last time, like no team that's ever started a season 0-7 has gone to the postseason. And that's a team that you looked at and you said, if they're healthy, you get Acuna back and you get Spencer Strider back, that's a team that can compete with the Dodgers for the National League. And it's just been one thing after another. Like even when they start playing better baseball, Spencer Strider goes back on the IL. Now you have some internal conflict, you know, with Ronald Acuna Jr. saying, hey, if I had not run the bases like Jared Kelnick, who just got here 5 minutes ago,
facts,
I would have got benched, which is he was 100%
right.
And then you have Brian Snicker like, oh, well, it's the timing of it. What do you mean it's the timing? And so that creates a bad situation totally in your room. Another one I'm surprised by, the Baltimore Orioles.
Ooh.
And they, this is where them and the Cubs are similar. When you build, you do the rebuild the right way and you get this best farm system in baseball and you have all these young studs and you inherit guys like Gunnar Henderson and you get an Adley Rutschman and you have Jackson Holliday and Cedric Mullins bouncing back to what he was a couple years ago when he was a 30-30 guy. And all these guys are pre-arbitration players, meaning that you don't have huge financial commitments. That's when you hit the button and say, all right, let's spend on starting pitching. What are our needs? And the Orioles have had a need for starting pitching for 3 seasons. Mm. And 2 years ago, they said, we're not going to go all in. Let's go get Jack Flaherty, who was coming off of a mid-fours ERA with St. Louis. And then you make the trade for a Corbin Burnes, but he's only there for one season. And you don't bring him back. And then you say, Charlie Morton, you're 42 years old. Come and pitch for us. And now he has an ERA over 10. They have Dean Kramer and Cade Povich have an ERA over 6. Like, Grayson Rodriguez, Zach Eflin are both on the IL. And Grayson Rodriguez, who was on the IL for inflammation of the elbow, now has a shoulder getting looked like. It's all bad.
It's all coming apart. And they don't have anybody with, like, a guaranteed contract, like, past 2020. They got one guy in 2027. It could get real
Tyler
ugly.
O'Neill.
Yeah, it could get real ugly real quick. Tyler O'Neill's the only guy.
Yes.
And that's scary. The Cubs aren't that, I don't think.
No, but that's when you're in that window where you have all these pre-R players and you have the flexibility to spend, you should spend because guys get expensive really fast.
Thank you so much, Russell Dorsey. Unfortunately, our time together today has come to an end. That is Russell Dorsey, the Yahoo Sports MLB insider.
Really quick before break, can I give Groats a quick Bears thought?
Oh,
Bears.
Yes.
Bears. All right. Bears. So I had been on the Genty train for I had talked myself into Genty for 2 months.
Okay.
I've now talked myself out of Genty.
Okay. Ooh. Go on. Say
and
more.
A tackle is never a sexy pick. Never.
Yes. Are you talking about defensive tackle or
offensive tackle?
Okay.
Like left tackle isn't sexy. If you draft a guard, that's
it's
not kinda
sexy. It's
kind of sexy. Unless it was like Quentin Nelson a couple years ago. That's sexy.
Right, yeah.
But I am now full all in on drafting a tackle at 10.
We are converting them one by one.
I mean, or trading back and right, getting best player available.
So, we're up against it.
Okay. Okay. Got you. It's on the record. Russ.
We'll see what they do. We'll see what they do. Happy draft eve to you. Safe travels to San Francisco. Russell
Thank
Dorsey.
You.
Follow him at Russ_Dorsey1.